Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Bewitching Book Tours Blog Talk Radio. I'm G.L. Ross, your host. Today's guest is Sam Poling, author of The Part That Doesn't Burn. Hi, Sam. We're happy to have you today.
Hi. Thanks for having me, Gail.
Absolutely. I'm excited to talk about this book. I think it is so interesting the way you are tying medical information into a fantasy thriller. Why don't you tell the readers a brief little synopsis about the book and so we can kind of fill them in before we get in depth with our questioning?
Oh, of course, sure. I'd love to. The synopsis is probably best explained by setting the setting first. It is a world where technology and magic, for that matter, since this is a fantasy novel, and anything in that nature is utterly banned, and being caught with any upper-level technology is punishable by severe penalties, including death. And in this world, there's, of course, plagues and other nastiness, and a set of alchemists who try to treat those plagues using old-world tech, the old-world technology that has been outlawed by the fanatical Church of Torden. And in the process of curing those plagues, they're branded heretics and they're hunted down. The story follows one of those alchemists and a witch who is also hunted by the church who is helping him escape.
What, have you always been a fan of dark fantasy?
Oh, absolutely. Ever since I was very young, I played PC games, including the PC game Diablo. It had a very dark tone, very brooding, melancholy. There was something attractive about it, something very human to it, something that delved deeper into the human condition than some of the more lighthearted fantasy stories do.
So when you were talking about you play all those games and stuff, you're obviously a technology geek, quote-unquote.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, you can think of it that way.
Well, are you also fascinated with magic and magic shows and all of that since you get into part of that in the writing?
I'm not necessarily focused on the magic. I think of the magic as just a medium through which to explore the human nature. I think of, you know, dark fantasy has a lot of things like, you know, your stereotypical monsters and dark spells and all that. But they're actually about the people that are involved with all those nastiness.
Well,
I think that it's a way to explore dread and struggle and suffering and overcoming those things if you put your characters up against those types of horrors.
Sure. Now, in this city or state where the setting of the story is, technology and magic are basically just completely forbidden because of the way the church views it, correct?
The church is an ancient order founded millennia ago that do ban those items, the technology and magic, because they blame it on the fall of civilization millennia ago. Civilization had been more advanced than ours is, but it suddenly collapsed and no one knows why. People believe it was misuse of technology and God punishing mankind. And thus, the Church of Torden kind of rose up out of the ashes.
Now, your main character, her name is Maribel, is that correct?
That's right,
am I saying it correctly? Okay, I'll make sure I'm pronouncing it correctly. Tell us a little about her and what makes her tick.
Maribel is the witch who is protecting the alchemist during his mission to cure the plague, but she is actually a deeply damaged woman. She was basically abused as a child. You know, her mother had her cloistered, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. I'm more of a reader than a speaker, sorry. you know, locked up her whole life.
Right.
Her mother views the world in a very dark way. Humanity's pathetic and ugly and all that sort of thing, and wouldn't allow her to have any friends growing up, would burn her toys that her father would give her, dissuade her from reading fairy tales that she was addicted to in secret. So she grew up deeply damaged, longing for a friend, but ultimately submitting to her mother's worldview.
So her process
is trying to grow past all that.
Sure.
Go ahead.
She gets so put out with everything from the part I've read is that she gets to where she creates a plague to just take down the whole city, just to basically take it to rubble and rebuild. What leads her to get so angry that she gets to that point, and how does she go about creating such a wild plan? I mean, not many people, when they get ticked off, decide to go take a city down to rubble.
Yeah. So it's no surprise early on in the novel you find out that the plague that the alchemist was treating, but curing, was actually her plague. So she's actually protecting him, deceiving him from the church so that he can alter the vaccine and allow her plague to flourish again. So she's basically luring him into a position where he has to do that for her. Her whole goal there is to essentially cull humanity because they're overpopulating, they're needy, etc. All the negative worldview her mother instilled in her is coming out, and she sees it as her obligation to do this, to cull humanity, because she doesn't see human beings as anything other than animals, initially anyways.
So does it almost like a revenge against her mother?
No, actually, it's in line with her mother. Had done similar culling things in the past, and her mother before her, and her mother before her. It's the tradition of the Fairfax family to do these things. They see it as their obligation.
Oh, okay. So now Autumn Fall is the town?
Autumn Fall is the city where it takes place, yes.
Okay. And so basically that whole town has always been corrupt and evil?
As far as any recorded history, it's been governed by a Fairfax countess. So essentially, because it's been governed by Mirabella's family, there has been some sort of corruption involved. Some type of plague has always been present. Some type of tragedies have always been occurring. Things to keep the population down without the people realizing what's causing these things. And the church has always also had a pretty heavy hand in all the activities as well.
How on earth did you come up with this idea, Sam?
I love dark fantasy.
Right.
I love the idea of starting with a protagonist who is pretty dark. Basically miserable. She is basically a mass murderer, well, in the making anyways. And to start from something so corrupt and dark and seeing if I can possibly bring it back to the light in any way, shape, or form. So that required her to, adventure essentially with this alchemist who has a completely different worldview, who wants to, save the world, he's self-sacrificing, he risks burning at the stake just to heal people. And how he can bring out her goodness, and in turn she kind of brings out some of his darkness as well. So it's all interest in the human condition.
Yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Yeah, no, go ahead.
No, you're good.
Oh, okay. Well, now when you talk about these two, that she brings out the good in him, she finds the good. Is there a love story mixed in with this in any way?
Well, it's more of him bringing out the good in her because he can sense something is wrong with her psychology, even as she's deceiving him. And he can sense that she has all these ties to all of her needs for friends and all of her fantasies of her fairy tales that she had when she was growing up that were taken from her or burned or something along those lines. And he's kind of weak and terrified of the church, so she kind of draws out some strength in him throughout the novel. But yes, it does start to brew into a love story. That aspect is definitely covered.
But that's, I want to make sure, you know, those romance readers, they have to make sure there's romance in there.
Yeah.
I noticed, I mean, I've been reading all of your reviews, and you have received incredible reviews about the book. Congratulations to you.
Oh, thank you.
This is your first novel that's out in, for the public to purchase, correct?
Yes, this would constitute my debut novel.
Wonderful. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yes, and you did it with a bang. And through the reviews, everybody seems to fall in love with Felix. Felix is their hero. Tell us more about Felix.
Felix is the deuterogenist. He's the alchemist who's on the run from the church. He's kind of Mirabelle's foil. A nice guy in every man. He's kind of squeamish, kind of nerdy, kind of weak-willed. But he has this quiet will of iron that no matter what horrors go on around him, he maintains his worldview that humanity is worth saving and all that sorts of things. And it kind of just draws on Mirabelle, and I like to think it draws on the reader as well. He's funny. He can he has a whole load of skills that are surprising. Like he can pick locks, and he's a constant surprise throughout the novel, especially as he begins to become stronger and fight back against the darkness that's been swallowing him up.
Well, now throughout this story, I mean, when you're sitting here talking about the medicine and the plague and all of this. And I know you said you love dark fantasy, and that's what helped you come up with a lot of the ideas. But I know, I don't know if the rest of our listeners know, that you have a background in medicine. I mean, you serve on a health and safety committee. You do disaster preparedness and infection control. I mean, this has to play into your writing.
What you always should write about what interests you. Not
sure.
Necessarily what you know about, because I think writing is just as much about discovery as it is about expression. I'm very firm on that. But you should write about what interests you. You should always do that. And, of course, it interests me enough to follow a career in it. I'm very interested in medicine and infection control, so I serve on an infection control board. But that's also what spills into my writing. Because I just can't help it.
Well, of course not.
There's something
not about
plagues
no.
and chasing them and combating them and how people can abuse them and use them, that sort of thing that makes for great storytelling.
Absolutely. And you're studying to be a nurse?
I am. I am currently going to college to get a degree. I want to become an RN. There's a lot of options as an RN. I hope to stay in some type of infection control and safety aspect of it.
Well, I think that's incredible. And I also think it's fascinating that most people who are good in math and science and go into that medical field just do not have a creative side. But obviously that's not true with you. You seem to have the whole aspect covered.
I consider myself left-brained. A lot of art is normally considered quote-unquote right-brained, you know, more traditional art, photography, acting, all that sorts of thing. They're normally considered more right-brain creative. The left brain, while it governs math and science, it can also govern language and prose. So maybe it's just that I'm left-brained.
Could be. Well, with going to school and working full-time, when do you find time to write?
Beats me. it just happens. I would write at work during my lunch break. I have an hour lunch break every day. So I'd bring my novel. Often there's severe traffic in my area. So after work, I'd sit in the break room and write until the traffic went down, and then I'd drive home in a fraction of the time. You find little pockets of time to do it.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, since you mentioned, we talked about your job and traveling and time, tell the listeners out there kind of a little bit about yourself, your everyday life, your family, or whatever you'd like to share with us.
Oh, sure, yeah. I have two pugs, Mandit and Zoe.
Oh, I love dogs.
I think I credited them in my novel as well. I would actually, during the revision process, I'd actually sit and read my novel aloud, because that helps you see how the sentences flow better than just your eyes
exactly.
on paper can do.
Yes,
and I would
I
actually
agree.
Read to the pugs.
Oh, I love so it.
They were my first beta readers, I think.
Did they ever run and hide because you frightened them so?
I don't think they would ever run. They're always just waiting for an opportunity to get a treat or something. And if you're talking to them in different voices, they think you're teasing them and working up to a treat of some kind.
Of course. Now, where do you live?
I live in Marysville, Washington.
Washington
so
State
would
is
be,
beautiful.
Yeah, Pacific Northwest, bad traffic, beautiful trees. Pine trees. I love pine trees.
Well, this is part of a series, correct? So we have a book two coming out?
Hopefully we will. I'm struggling to get everything squared away. Now I have marketing on top of my noveling, on top of my college, on top of my work, et cetera,
right.
et cetera. But I have written some chapters. I'm working on it slowly but surely. First novel kind of, I never stopped working on it. I worked on it almost every day for the better part of a year. I just need to get back into that groove. I'm still trying to figure out the full plot line, that sort of thing. But usually that kind of works itself out as you're working on it.
Well, now how did you get into writing?
I've always loved writing. I can think back to grade school to where I was in love with writing. I always felt fascinated that I can control a world and create characters that are colorful. It wasn't enough just to observe the work of others, television and other books and that sort of thing.
Right.
Because it's just the work of others. I wanted to involve myself, justify my creative existence, so to speak. So I've always been desperate to find some type of medium to express myself and to discover. And writing is the ultimate medium for that.
Oh, I agree. Now, you wrote screenplays before?
I've written screenplays, that sort of thing. Again, nothing's ever been published. This is my debut work. Just stuff like, for high school and college and,
sure.
and stuff in the free time. A lot of stuff no one's ever seen.
Well, but it may come out before long. We may get to see it when everybody starts looking for sampling writing to read. What made you finally decide to take the jump into trying to get your work published?
I started to get more formal with my writing technique and my prose. I discovered that you usually start to get a lot better at things when you start to involve others and you start to get other viewpoints. Whatever
right.
it is you're doing, any sport, any game, if you're competitive, if you're cooperative, you start to pick up things other people have picked up. And you start to learn and you start to improve. And then you start to want to see how far you can go with it.
I completely agree.
At a certain point, my characters were just begging me to see if I could get them published. My story demanded it. So
yes.
I worked on it as hard as I possibly could, and I took my chances. And this is where I got.
That's wonderful. And I have to say, I love your cover. Who came up with the idea for the cover, and who's your cover artist?
Cora at Cora Graphics is my cover artist. I kind of left myself out of a lot of the process intentionally because I love the idea of someone else's interpretation,
mm-hmm.
Jumping out at me. So
right.
I kind of just gave her some vague basics, some elements and themes that are in my novel. I described some of my characters, what I absolutely didn't want and what I thought might work. And so she came up with that. Well, she came up with a lot of different things. We kind of narrowed it down to that.
Okay. Well, it's absolutely beautiful, and it's very eye-catching. For our listeners out there, if you haven't seen the cover, you've got to go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble somewhere and check it out because it's absolutely stunning.
My favorite aspect is the colors.
I'm sorry?
My favorite aspect of the cover is the colors.
Yes,
I agree. The reds and blues and how they kind of just blend together.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, the color's gorgeous, and I love her hair color. It's just so stunning.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite scene in the book or a favorite quote or line?
My favorite scene is probably, hopefully not to spoil too much, but my favorite scene is probably, but I did mention, as some can surmise, Mirabelle does have her own character arc where she goes from pretty much pure evil, for lack of a better word, to try to rediscovering her soul that had been stamped on when she was a child. My favorite scene is probably when it all comes to a crisis moment and she just utterly breaks down. And she feels like she's lost everything and mentally and physically just throws an absolute fit, destroys half of a building.
It's
very fun scene. It's very emotional. She goes from being vain to something quite different.
Oh, no. I know what you're saying because I find that when I'm writing, I get so into the scene that I can't get my fingers typing fast enough, and I half the time I have tears running down my face or whatever, you know, because I'm so into it myself. So I'm sure if you have buildings tumbling that you're probably facing the same feat trying to get the fingers typing fast enough.
The building may not have literally tumbled, but it definitely did within her emotions.
Sure. Well, since this is a book one of the series, does it end in a cliffhanger?
No. And I firmly believe everybody's different. Everybody has different tastes as writers and as readers. But my tastes are that every story should be self-contained. Even if it's in a series, I feel the series should be a bonus, not a requirement.
Mm-hmm.
Every book that I write will be self-contained, enjoyable, and stand on its own right and have its own conclusion. That's just what I like. And if you want to read it as a series, there's extra joy in doing that. But if you want to start a book two or if there's a book three, that will all work. And that's my promise as a writer.
So each book will be standalone?
Each book will be part of the series, but you could read it as a standalone title.
Okay.
So it's not required that you read the first.
I'm sorry?
No, go ahead.
No, I was saying, so you're saying, though, you need to read, like, book one to go to understand book two? I mean, does Mirabelle continue in the story, or will there be completely new characters and plots in book two of the series?
It will contain the same characters,
Okay. Well,
the ones that, you know, survive.
Right.
It will continue the plot in a logical fashion, but I will write it in such a way that you don't have to read book one. That if you were to, say, pick it up at a store somewhere, just book two, and you were to read that, it would be fulfilling and logical, you know, follow a logical pattern, just as much as if you had read book one. Does that make sense?
Yes. No, it does, completely. No, I'm definitely
excellent.
With you.
Yeah.
How did you come up with your title?
Oh, The Part That Doesn't Burn specifically refers to Mirabelle's childhood toys that her father would give her and on his rare visits would be found, caught, and burned by her mother, by Mirabelle's mother, as a lesson in being stronger and not coddling toys and that sort of thing. Mirabelle, at 4 years old, found a part of one toy that didn't burn, which was a rabbit's foot. This was a stuffed rabbit. And she hid it from her mother. And later in the story, becomes a metaphor for the human soul itself, that her mother burned away a lot of Mirabelle's humanity, but there's a part of her humanity that could not be destroyed.
Okay. That's interesting. So Mirabelle, I mean, if you were going to choose three words to describe Mirabelle, what three words would come to mind?
Well, the first word is automatically vain. she's very vain. Damaged is another word I'd pick. Clever is another word.
Okay.
Vain, damaged, and clever.
So is she, when you say clever, is she smart?
She has a very high IQ. She's actually genetically enhanced. That's another tidbit about her. Her mother wanted, you know, every member in her family uses illegal tech to genetically enhance the next daughter in the family to make them more powerful and more intelligent, more nimble, etc. So she actually has a genetically enhanced IQ, but her damaged emotions often get in the way of that.
Well, since this has been your debut novel, what has been the one thing that has surprised you most about putting your book out there for publication and marketing?
What has surprised me most about the process of marketing?
Yes, and just getting your book out there for the public.
Well, honestly, the most surprising aspect was my book trailer, which just got completed tonight. That I'm going to be having out there. It was shot in 4K and actually had special effects involved.
Wonderful.
And that was throughout the whole marketing process. Seeing that trailer was probably the biggest surprise, seeing the special effects actually pop up on the screen. I was like, oh, dang.
Yeah. Now, where can our listeners go and to see that, to view it?
Well, it was just finished tonight, so it's doing its process of being uploaded. But I think it's safe to say that if you search for The Part That Doesn't Burn in YouTube, probably a novel trailer or anything like that, you'll be able to find it easily that way. Also on my website, SamuelPulling.com.
Good, that's what I was about to ask, yes. No, say that again.
My website is SamuelPulling. Excuse me, I need water here. My website is SamuelPulling.com. That's
Samuel, not Sam.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
And Pulling is spelled P-O-L-I-N-G.
Okay. And do you have any social media sites that our readers can follow you on?
I have a Twitter. It's at Samuel Pulling.
Okay.
Excuse me.
And we'll
and I also
say,
have
go,
a, a. Go ahead.
Ahead.
So my Facebook is the same. Well, it's actually samuel.t.pulling.
Okay. And so obviously the trailer will be on your Facebook. There will be a link there.
Yeah, I'll throw it all over the place.
I would, too. I can't wait to see it. Well, now, where can our readers, I mean, obviously now they can follow you Facebook, Twitter, your website. They can go to YouTube and watch the trailer. Where can they find your book?
My book is on all the major digital vendors. It's on Amazon UK. It's on Kobo. It's on iTunes, Barnes & Noble, and I think a few others. You can actually find all the vendors on my website.
Okay, and that's at SamuelPulling.com.
Exactly, yes.
Well, I'm very excited for you, and just from listening to how your mind works with the creativity and the development of your characters, and then after seeing all of your reviews and reading an excerpt of the book, I think you have a very bright career in front of you, and I have no doubt that our readers are going to love reading the book, and I encourage them to post reviews. Reviews are what every author craves, and I just wish you
Absolutely.
The very best.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
Oh, my pleasure. All right, folks, we'll check out The Part That Doesn't Burn by Sam Pulling, and I will be with you next time. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you.